Hello, it's Friday 30th of October. I'm Hannah Pearson from Pear Anderson.
And I'm Gary Bellman from Check In Asia.
And this is episode 7 of the Friday Rewind.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in to the 7th installment of the Friday Rewind show.
Over the next 15 minutes, we'll zoom through 5 top talking points in Southeast Asian travel from the past 7 days. So what's up first, Gary?
Our first story this week is Thailand, but it's not special tourist visa. It's the high-speed railway, which was eventually signed this week with China. It's a small portion of a three-way eventual project, which will go from Bangkok right up to the Lao border. But this is the first part, a 253-kilometer section of railway, which will use China's high-speed railway technology, its rail cars, its track technology as well. And this was signed between the State Railway of Thailand, China Railway International, and China Railway Design Corporation. It's a pretty interesting project because it's actually been on the board for at least 3 years. Back in July 2017, this was announced. Thailand was going to actually fund the track build itself, but still use Chinese technology. It never happened. And so now China is actually stepping in and is going to be a significant part of this railway, which, as I said, it goes from Bangkok to the province of Nakhon Ratchasima, which is about 253 kilometers. Ultimately, that's phase one. Ultimately, phase two and phase three will take this high-speed rail line up to the Lao border. Obviously, China's building its own high-speed railway there in Lao, which will go down to Vientiane and should open at the end of next year. So we're starting to see the connectivity of this trans-ASEAN high-speed railway, which will connect with China's own high-speed railway.
Yeah, it's exciting, isn't it? But I mean, I was Googling earlier because I wasn't quite sure where Nakhon Ratchasima is, and it's still 400 kilometers away from Vientiane, so they've still got a heck of a lot of track to keep building to reach the Lao border.
Absolutely. I mean, by now, this first phase should have been built. I mean, the original plans were that this phase one would be completed, I think, next year. And then they would have built phase two and phase three much more quickly. But obviously, this one now is only just about getting started. They've only really announced the purchase of basically the signaling equipment, the train carriages, and some of the operation and maintenance works, which comes to about 50 billion baht. The overall project is going to be 179 billion baht. So this one is not yet up and running. It's going to take a while. And I think it's going to take at least until 2026 for this particular section to be built. So going up to the Lao border, you know, we're looking certainly into the next decade.
Gosh, no train holidays from China anytime soon then to Thailand.
Not yet, unless, you know, there is a possibility that they may step this up once the Lao section is completed. I wouldn't rule anything out. I think a lot of this will depend on the success of the China-Lao railway.
Yeah. So should we move on? Neighbouring country.
Let's move on to Cambodia. What's happening in Cambodia, Hannah?
Well, Cambodia, I mean, and we have always known that they want this, but they've come out and said this again, that they're really looking into a bubble with China, into a travel bubble with China. I mean, this is not surprising. You know, China is the top arrivals market for Cambodia. The two are very intimately connected. But the Ministry of Tourism are now looking at what they kind of call closed loop charter planes system in place. So it sounds a little bit like a special tourist visa in a way, which is also a closed loop, but specifically between China and Cambodia. Now, I mean, I think the travel trade are positive about this, but they also feel that this kind of agreement should be looking at Vietnam and looking at Thailand as well, because, you know, they're close neighbors and they also generate a lot of tourism arrivals for Cambodia too. And they've both, you know, really controlled the virus very well. I mean, the details are still not really fleshed out yet, and there's not really a sense of whether China is also on the other side of the negotiation table or if this was just a purely kind of Cambodia fantasy that this is going to happen. We'll have to see. But they were still talking about still requiring this $2,000 deposit upon arrival, which, if you remember, you know, was incredibly controversial when it was implemented. And it was first implemented as $3,000 and then kind of lowered to $2,000. So I can imagine that would still be quite a barrier to travelers coming in. But you know, it's still another step in the right direction. We haven't seen Cambodia negotiating many travel bubbles or talking about negotiating travel bubbles. So this at least indicates some kind of progress.
It does. I think you hit a nail very hard on the head a few minutes ago there, Hannah, when you said that the travel trade and the government have slightly different views on this. The government is very keen to push forward a deal with China. The travel trade is particularly keen to do deals with Thailand and Vietnam because you can get overland travel. This is a very, very political issue. And the closeness of political ties between Cambodia and China is very, very well known. We're going to come to Laos next, and we'll talk about that because both Cambodia and Laos have been in the headlines this week in terms of their relationship with China and how that impacts on their relationship with the other ASEAN countries. But it's absolutely right that we've been saying this for weeks, Hannah, that, you know, whatever happens in terms of outbound travel from China into parts of the safe parts of Southeast Asia will begin with charter travel. There's absolutely no doubt about that. And it will be with the safe countries, which will most likely be, I would think, Cambodia and Laos. But getting these deals up and running is going to be very, very difficult. This week, China itself has been very, very focused on the domestic sector. We've had the plenum in China, so the whole governmental focus has been about the next five-year plan and how that is going to be really focused on the domestic economy. So in terms of whether China is actually negotiating these deals at the moment, it's hard to say. But you would probably imagine that Cambodia wants to get something up and running for Chinese New Year, even if it can get a small amount of travelers in by that time. It's really, this is one definitely to watch because I would imagine something is going to happen.
Mm. Yeah, I think so, yeah. Should we move on? Stay within the Mekong, but another neighbor then. So you just mentioned it, Gary. So Laos. So what's happening in Laos then?
Well, again, a similar political move to try and set up a fast track deal to allow essential travel from China into Laos. It looks as though that at the moment might be the scope of what this could be. It doesn't look as though it's going to be too much more than that, but it would remove the 14-day quarantine period. We may see more diplomatic staff, technical experts, foreign labor for special projects, that kind of thing being allowed into Laos. But, you know, again, it doesn't look, it's a fast track immigration policy. And when we hear that name, you know, we relate it to what Singapore has done on fast tracks. And they are very specific and quite restricted in terms of how they implement travel between two different countries. But again, I would imagine this would be the first stage to something a little bit more. Laos said it might also do this a similar deal with Vietnam. So you'd have Vietnam and China, which are two very, very important markets, both for tourism and very much so in terms of business for Laos. The economic impact of COVID-19 is really eating into the Laos economy, as it is all economies across Southeast Asia. But the Laos economy is relatively weak in ordinary circumstances, and it really needs some inflows of financing. So again, this one looks as though it has legs on it, but in terms of what it will actually involve and how restricted it will be, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, and again, we've got locals who are quite concerned about this because Laos has only had 24 cases of COVID-19. It's had incredibly low case numbers, and it's pretty much achieved that by shutting the country, by isolating the country. Laos nationals are not really permitted to do outbound travel. Very, very few people have been allowed in. So now I think the prospect of opening to China, and you know, the date for that is set to be the 1st of November. We'll see whether it actually happens. And Vietnam, possibly the 8th of November, a week later. It will be interesting to see how the locals react to that. I'm sure some of the tourism businesses are probably happy. The hotels, they can get some kind of occupancy. But like you say, the levels of this are going to be relatively low to start off with simply because of the restrictions that are in place.
Yeah, my gut feeling on this, Hannah, is that this is basically to try and bring in investment. So it will basically be, you know, business travelers only, diplomats, you know, that kind of thing as a first phase. And then we'll see where it goes from there. But I don't see it being any more expensive than that.
Let's move on to Indonesia. So Indonesia is, we've called it in our notes, Jurassic Park Indonesia. Do you want to explain?
This is hugely controversial, isn't it? This is an environmental story as well as a tourism story. This is the island, the Komodo Island, Indonesia's Rinca Island. Which is famous for the Komodo dragons. These giant lizards are the largest lizard species in the world, and they only exist in this part of the world. And travel over recent years to Komodo National Park, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, it's one of Indonesia's 9 UNESCO World Heritage Cultural and Natural Interest sites. But travel to this region has grown hugely in recent years, and it's become, obviously, as everything is at the moment, it's a very Insta-worthy destination. Everybody wants to take pictures near to the Commodores, but not too close because they are actually dangerous. But what's happened in recent weeks is that the local authorities are building a tourism project, which is basically mostly a lookout point with some facilities so you can actually look at the Commodore dragons from up above. Now, what happened over the weekend is that they launched this with the music to Jurassic Park. That was part of the video. So that's how it's got nicknamed Jurassic Park. And then there was a picture this weekend of a truck which was doing some of the digging and then the groundwork for this project. And you saw this huge giant Commodore walking right beside the truck. Now, it's hard to tell whether it was photoshopped. It's hard to tell whether it's authentic. But obviously, it's set alight social media and particularly the environmental groups who are saying that, you know, this is horrific. This is commoditizing wildlife for tourism and nothing more than that. And the obvious overlay of that as well is that Indonesia actually considered closing Commodore National Park last year to allow regeneration of the habitat of these dragons. And now it looks to be destroying part of it. So that, you know, there is a huge contradiction there about how these incredible animals are being treated.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because like you say, it's, you know, they were obviously building this to help tourists appreciate the Komodo dragons. But if they're endangering their habitats through building this, then, you know, what's the point? So it's certainly a fine line that the government and that the developers need to be treading, but they're definitely in hot water about this at the moment.
And you kind of get the feeling a little bit that ordinarily in an ordinary world, there would have been a lot of outcry about this happening when it was announced, but obviously it's kind of gone a little bit under the radar because of COVID-19. But now, you know, this photograph and this concept that perhaps, you know, the actual ecosystem of the island is being damaged is throwing into the spotlight, and yeah, you wonder what will happen next. Hannah, back to Malaysia. Tell us what's happening here, because there's loads happening here right now.
Yeah, so Malaysia, which probably our listeners know, is where Gary and I are both based, and we're both based in KL. So like you said, there's quite a lot going on. We've had our conditional movement control order extended in Kuala Lumpur. So that was imposed just over 2 weeks ago. It has not really, I mean, it's not only in Kuala Lumpur, it's in surrounding states as well. So it's in Selangor, it's in Putrajaya, because the three states, people cross the borders between the three of them. They work in one state, live in another, and so on. This lockdown that the government have implemented is kind of a partial lockdown in the offices are still open. It's been a bit messy in terms of implementation, I think, in terms of understanding what the guidelines actually mean for businesses. But it doesn't seem to be bringing down the numbers hugely. I think that's the critical thing to note about the ones, at least in the Klang Valley, which they call KL, and the surrounding areas. And of course, you've got this other, a conditional movement control order, which has been implemented in Sabah. So over in eastern Malaysia, in Borneo. And Sabah has really been experiencing, for Malaysia, huge case numbers. You know, at one point, I think they had 800 new cases reported last week, something like that. Their numbers seem to be slowly going down, but the crucial impact of all of this is on tourism, is on the economy. So again, with this prolonged kind of lockdown, it's going to be a month now in, you know, these states, it's really hurting the small vendors, and domestic tourism is pretty much at a standstill again. And it's not just the impact that this has on, say, Kuala Lumpur tourism businesses, Kuala Lumpur hotels or Sabah hotels. It's the impact that it has in other states as well. So, for example, in Penang, they're also seeing a drop in hotel occupancy rates, very much due to Kuala Lumpur being one of the major source markets. So by cutting off, you know, that kind of traffic from certain states, you're having an impact on the whole country, and the whole country is having to find ways to climb out of this ditch, I suppose, deeper than a ditch that it's got into.
Absolutely. You mentioned there that KL is, you know, is the primary source market for everywhere in peninsular Malaysia. I mean, the Sabah tourism economy has been absolutely destroyed by COVID-19. There's no question about that. But you look at cities like Penang, Malacca, and Langkawi, you know, weekend travel to those destinations from KL was relatively strong. It peaked once we were actually came out of lockdown in June. You know, there was a big surge. A lot of hotels and resorts dropped their prices, but that has weakened a little bit in recent weeks, but it's come to a standstill. I was talking to a hotel GM the other day, and he said that the figures that are being announced, even in KL, are the average occupancy rates of hotels are around 20 to 30%, which is, I mean, that's ghastly given an ordinary year. But he said a lot of hotels are even down in single figures. And he said it's coming to a point where particularly some of the branded hotels, their franchisees are very close to going out of business. And that actually will then impact how these branded hotels actually will operate in future. Maybe the actual brands themselves might have to step in and overtake some of these franchised hotels, which is something they normally don't like to do. And they would only do that in an emergency situation. I think the situation at the moment in the Malaysian hotel industry is absolutely dire.
Yeah, like you said, and you've got the Malaysian Association of Hotels, MATA, so the Association for Tour and Travel Agents, all asking the government for further wage subsidies, for extensions of loan moratoriums as well, just to be able to get through and survive. And of course, the airlines have still not received any government support either. And they're going to be hurting very badly from this, particularly between the ban between interstate travel between East and Western Malaysia. You know, those are one of the most lucrative domestic routes. So without that, without international travel, they've got to be struggling right now.
Yeah, I mean, AirAsia this week revised down, didn't it? Its expectations for the fourth quarter quite significantly. And, you know, but even to hit those targets, it's looking at around 70 to 75% recovery compared to what it was pre-COVID. But to hit those targets, it's going to need people to be able to travel. And you and I, Hannah, you know, we're here in KL. We have about 20 case infections per day. And the city is, as you mentioned, we're under a travel ban. It's really going to hurt deeply into the travel economy. And, you know, I'm worried for these hotels, particularly in Penang and Langkawi.
Yeah, it's going to hurt the smaller players without some serious government intervention, I think, into supporting them with wages, with tax exemptions, with everything else.
Yeah. So I'm sorry to say, but that's a gloomy note to finish upon this week, Hannah.
It is. We normally try and find a positive story, but I think we struggled with that this week. So as Gary, you say, that's the end of this week's edition of the Friday Rewind. We'll be back with our usual midweek edition of the podcast next week.
In the meantime, you can catch up with all of our previous episodes of the Friday Rewind Show and the Southeast Asia Travel Show on our website, www.theseasiatravelshow.com, or search for the Southeast Asia Travel Show on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Podchaser, and Stitcher.
That's a wrap for edition 7 of the Friday Rewind, and we look forward to talking Southeast Asian travel and tourism again with you very soon.
Yeah, thanks very much. Bye-bye.